This is the EPFR Exchange Podcast. All opinions expressed by Cam, Kirsten, or our podcast guests are solely of their own opinion and do not reflect the opinion of EPFR, part of a private equity Montague's portfolio of standalone companies. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon for investment decisions.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back on the EPFR Exchange Podcast. My name is Kirsten Longbottom, and we are joined by EPFR's Director of Research, Cameron Brandt. We were out this past week in Mexico doing a bit of EPFR discovery, if you could say so, looking onto what's to come in 2023, you know, changing our mindset. So Cam, what were your three big takeaways from this week?
Well, apart from getting a taste of what I think we all believe, probably erroneously, the life on the Google campus is like, they were mainly the obvious ones to sort of actually meet in the flesh people that in some cases I've worked with for nigh on 3 years without actually seeing them in the flesh. And certainly Zoom did not, and Teams did not do some of them justice, both in terms of, you know, physical stature and their dynamism. And obviously, you know, the reason for the event was that we are, once again, a standalone company that brings its own challenges and excitement. And it was interesting to see how other people viewed those, both the challenges and the opportunities. What were your takeaways?
I guess pretty much similar, along those similar lines, meeting people in person. I think also being thrown into different kind of presentations and you know, sharing my voice as well on some different aspects, as well as hearing people's perspectives on projects that we've worked on for a while. And just really feeling like when I'm getting back, I'm going to hit the ground running. I have a long list of things that are ideas that came out of it. So yeah, same lines. Well, there's a quite array of topics to cover. Some might be more influential on the fund flow and allocation side. I guess we can kick it off with some Sino-US relation talk. You know, that's been going on for over 30 years. But most recently, the US recovered electronic sensors from a fallen Chinese spy balloon or research balloon, whichever view you pick to take. But you highlighted how economic policy in both countries is focused on reducing dependency on each other. U.S. equity funds recorded their fifth outflow of the 7 weeks so far this year on the back of retail redemptions. And China equity funds, well, despite a retail rebound, China equity funds posted their first consecutive weekly outflow since the second quarter of last year. What areas or even sectors will these tensions and shift to dependency affect, do you think? Loaded question.
Well, that's a topic for multiple podcasts. But yes, certainly, there was a brief thaw there in January, somewhat deliberate, I think, on the part of the Chinese government, to sort of minimize the fairly harsh tone that has emerged from both sides in recent years, but that hasn't lasted very long. And while I don't think there's very few people who doubt that China will have some kind of economic rebound in the second half of this year, the bounce will be higher and deeper if Americans are buying the way they usually do. And then further out, I think some investors and fund managers are being forced to, face the question of what the growth profile in China looks like if it really is disengaged from the U.S. And China doesn't have the often surprisingly unfettered access to U.S. and other Western technology and capital that they've enjoyed in recent years. Yeah, and it's not an open and shut question. China faces a complicated process of improving their retirement system at a time when a lot of people are in what we would call the golden years here. They're anxious to have Western expertise to help with that. But in other areas, it's getting fairly brass knuckles again. And that suits some of the political agendas on this side. The Biden administration is certainly quite comfortable with less globalization, more government-directed industrial policy. So, the incentive to pull back is definitely coming from both sides. And we saw that in the sector funds. One thing that caught my eye was, despite expectations of much stronger Chinese demand in the second half of the year, both commodities and energy sector funds had, in the case of energy funds, quite significant outflows. Though when you drill deeper, you did find some sort of more specific targeting of anticipated Chinese demand, especially in the case of record-setting inflows for the dedicated copper funds that we isolated from our broader commodity sectors. Another thing that struck me in the sector fund flows was, and has for a while, is the lack of consistent flows into healthcare, despite the fact that COVID has not gone away, and there's a huge backlog of, for want of a better term, health work that needs to be done by people who deferred it during the height of the COVID pandemic. Have you picked up on that?
Yeah, definitely. Obviously, we had we're kind of in this post-COVID recovery, but at the same time, there's other countries that are still kind of dealing with it firsthand, and China's still trying to veer away from its zero COVID policy, but still struggling to fully adjust to that. Healthcare sector funds have endured 4 weeks of redemptions. That's totaled $3.3 billion, and that has largely been underpinned by biotechnology only funds. Those had their outflow this week was double the headline number of the overall healthcare and biotech group. Last year we looked at the change in allocation since the start of the year for Europe regional, GEM global, and US sector allocations. We found that healthcare was actually one of the groups that they allocated most to last year, while information and technology was the group that they pulled out most from. And that pattern could be kind of changing in the start of 2023. We've seen, heavy outflows from healthcare and technology, also heavy redemptions for good of the past 13 or so weeks. We'll kind of see how that plays out in the next few months.
Now, it sounds like there's a cost of capital element in those redemptions too, with tech and biotech.
Yeah, definitely. In this latest week, we saw financials, industrials, telecoms, and utilities, the groups that pulled in inflows this week. Energy and technology were the groups to suffer outflows of over $1 billion. Can you talk a little bit about the guidance we're seeing in earnings reports and how that's changing investor sentiment?
In the broadest possible terms, this for the U.S. corporate earnings season anyway, what we've tended to see is earnings reports for the fourth quarter of last year that met expectations, but those reports very frequently accompanied by guidance which dampened expectations for the current and next few quarters. And it does seem like investors are beginning to listen, especially since some of the other indicators such as the core inflation rate, job growth in the U.S., are not proving particularly helpful in the assumption that the Fed will pivot sooner than the markets were anticipating coming into this year.
We also track volatility funds, which you talked about in the recent Navigator editions. How do we gauge or define this, and have we seen any trends emerging from it recently?
Well, when I look at them, they are again custom groupings pulled out of our broader alternative data set. And they basically fall into two buckets, one that follow the widely cited and tracked VIX index, and then the other is sort of all others. And, you know, what I noted in passing this week is that despite a fair number of uncertainties out there, at least for now, people aren't really kind of moving to, either play them or seek protection from them by, sending significant amounts of money to the volatility funds we track. And again, I think there's a feeling that volatility is another of those implicit issues that the Fed now keeps an eye on, along with full employment, and that there's less need for volatility funds, that, if things get really volatile, you'll get pretty brisk action from policymakers. But I will confess I was expecting to see a little more action and money in those particular groups when I looked.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe it's to come.
Yes, it could.
I guess on a less happy note, the Russia-Ukraine conflict is nearing its one-year anniversary. Last year, we conducted a poll on LinkedIn asking how soon the ending of the conflict would be, and 38% said more than 12 months. And they were right. It may be time to conduct another survey asking the same question, but do you think we're gearing up for another whole year, or maybe give our listeners a recap of what you think the biggest implications have been so far?
Well, yet another question that we could devote substantial amounts of time to. As is often the case, the law of unintended consequences has a lot to work with here. In the case of Europe, it's certainly been a major challenge to some of the more comfortable assumptions underpinning certainly the manufacturing sides of their economies. Their assumptions about how defense should be conducted, funded, and at what levels. And there seems to me to be still some resistance to letting go of those. I think Germany clearly would like to go back to not spending relatively very much on its military, and has been sort of very slow to act on the promises that emerged in the immediate aftermath of Russia's attack. So ESG, the greening of their energy systems, is in fits and starts, going to move, though, in the direction of that happening. What happens to some of their really energy-intensive industries like chemicals and fertilizer remains an open question. Business usually proves to be more adaptable than you think. And that certainly proved the case, but there's only so far they can go to reduce energy inputs and the like. My sense is that when things change, they'll change quickly. We've gotten fairly used to grinding stalemate, and certainly Russia's willingness to sacrifice people towards the aim of overpowering Ukraine shouldn't be underestimated. But they don't have unlimited resources. And again, while they've proved more adaptable in terms of dealing with the sanctions, those sanctions are biting and will have, I think, pretty significant long-term impacts. I mean, you know, I think Lenin is famously quoted as saying, you know, the last capitalist will hang is the one who sold us the rope to hang all the others. But I think it's going to be very hard for, you know, Western companies to, you know, invest directly in Russia, even if the war ended tomorrow, and you have a major exodus of talent seeking to avoid being drafted. So, you know, in the short run, I think we'll have probably have a status quo into the middle of the year. Long term, it's going to change both Russia and develop Europe in significant ways.
All right. Well, I mean, that's a lot to digest. And like you said, I'm sure we could spend an entire podcast episode on each of these topics, and maybe we should.
Yes.
Thank you, Cam, as always, and we'll resume battle next week.
Yeah, no, thank you. But we'll regroup next week.
Sounds good. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the EPFR Exchange Podcast. For more information or to suggest a topic for a future podcast, please visit epfr.buzzsprout.com or email us directly at epfrexchangepodcast@informa.com.